All right, Mark, can you please introduce yourself and a bit about what you do?
My name is Mark Morano. I'm the publisher of the website Climate Depot, daily news information on climate, energy, and environment. I'm the author of three books, most recently Green Fraud, Why the Green New Deal is Even Worse Than You Think, and also my new one in 2022 is The Great Reset, The Permanent Lockdown and the Global Elites.
You know, that second title you mentioned is really in line with what we're working on. The idea that these giant overarching agendas and policies at the globalist level, the UN, the WEF, they're trickling down into concrete policies that are being implemented in different countries, Sri Lanka, the Netherlands, US. Can you talk a bit about how that process works?
Well, yes, this is something they've worked on, really, I guess, since World War I, in a way. I mean, with Woodrow Wilson setting up the League of Nations, which becomes the United Nations, the idea is they want everyone on the same page. So as that philosophy pertains to climate, energy, environment, and the whole sustainable development agenda and climate, they want every country following essentially the same rules. That's been the whole push for the United Nations, you know, Kyoto Protocol and then the Paris Agreement. The idea is everyone's on the same page, all uniformity, because it's a global crisis and we need people to fight it. And that we saw that in real time when it came to COVID, because you know, the public health guidance, like Fauci says, we just issue guidance. We're not responsible for anything. Well, it became literally like the law from above. This was no dissent was allowed from any guidance that they issued. And they want to codify and that even further. World Health Organization wants a pandemic treaty where the nations that sign on, the World Health Organization will have the power to declare global lockdowns and mandates and mask mandates and restrictions on travel, whatever they want. So it's about absolute control. The thing that the global agenda cannot stand are outliers and dissent. So in the case of COVID, places like Florida, South Dakota, Sweden, and a couple other countries, maybe Brazil, were just horrific to them. And that's one of the reasons they fought it. And in the case of the climate agenda, and you have, they actually call them the rogue nations, like under Donald Trump. The United States was a rogue nation. Brazil was a rogue nation. At times, Russia has been called a rogue nation, never China, but Russia, because they don't sign on or strongly support this climate agenda enough. So that's the whole point. It's all about unanimity, no dissent, and speaking from one action. And that's what's scary about it. It's a central planned vision of the world that you could never even achieve in previous generations, but you could achieve it now in the digital age because of all the levers of power now that are controlled by these global institutions, everything from banking to corporations to the media to academia, and all the attendant things from social media, big tech. So they have complete power, and what they want pretty much is what they get.
So one thing you mentioned there when you were kind of going through some of the like specific manifestations of these policies are lockdowns. Can you talk a bit about some of the other types of ways that they want to control people?
Let's start with the Great Reset. It's a very simple concept. They actually state in the World Economic Forum website, you will own nothing, you'll be happy, everything you want will be delivered by drone, you'll have no privacy, but life will never be better. I mean, what I'm giving you is literally verbatim from what their philosophy of the Great Reset is. The United States will no longer be the world's superpower, meat will be a rare and expensive treat, 3D printer will print up your lab-grown fake meat that you can print many ounces a minute, yummy. And they want to literally have control over everything from banking in terms of achieving equity. They want to have control over your ability to freedom of movement because part of all of this Great Reset is a climate emergency. So they want to limit your travel. There have been suggestions of flying only once every 2 or 3 years. There have been suggestions of having under a climate emergency that you have to go literally go to a bureaucrat or fill out a form and have a, quote, morally justified reason by which to fly. In other words, if you flew to a funeral, okay, you'll get a pass. But if you want to fly to Florida for a vacation, you know, I'm sorry, you did that, 2 years ago, you got to wait another. The planet can't handle it. Are you a planet killer? When it comes to vehicles, the reason they liked the COVID lockdown so much, it was stay-at-home orders, curfews. When Biden was first elected, his key advisors on COVID were talking about a ban on interstate travel in order to control COVID. They love this. And if you look at that, part of it, we have Andrew Yang running for Democratic president. Not only were they talking about banning, and they're talking about that now, banning the gas-powered cars, but they're talking about ending private car ownership. Because in a climate emergency, cars are one of the biggest sources of these dangerous planet-killing emissions. So Andrew Yang actually said, I believe it was at the Georgetown University event on MSNBC, that he believed abolishing private car ownership and instead offering roving fleets of rental electric vehicles instead. The UK Transportation Secretary under Boris Johnson announced last year that owning a car was outdated 20th century thinking. So they're going right at the core, especially for an American, because all of this is mostly targeted at Americans because we have the biggest carbon footprint per person. So they're going after our freedom of movement. They're going after our even the size of our houses. Part of it is, you know, this whole part of the Green New Deal, part of this agenda is the suburbs are racist. So they're going with zoning. They're trying to bring in public housing. They're trying to essentially break up the suburbs. And that war on the middle class is all part of it. They're collapsing the current order in order to impose their new order. And when you collapse the current order, you're going to have bankruptcies, with economic calamity, and this is where equity asset firms come in, Chinese firms come in, buy up property, people become renters. Remember, you'll own nothing and you'll be happy. Well, it doesn't mean someone's going to own something. You're just going to be the renter. You're going to be the serf in the situation. You're not going to be the lord. And so that's a classic example. Look at American farmland. You have in Sri Lanka does the biggest organic experiment ever tried on a nation state basis. The president of Sri Lanka does a bragging post, I believe it was 2019 or 20, in a World Economic Forum website, bragging, we're going to bring such prosperity. The country goes all organic, completely faces food shortages, complete collapse. The presidential palace is overrun. The peasants, or the masses, if you will, go in and swim in a swimming pool. The president is ousted from the experiment, gone horribly wrong. The same time, World Economic Forum protege, someone who went through the Young Leaders Forum, is a guy named Rutte in the Netherlands, their prime minister, allows his country under court order to go with this new WEF net zero great reset agenda of stopping modern agriculture. So Netherlands is the biggest exporter of meat in Europe. They're shutting down, not the big corporate farms, they're shutting down the small and middle-sized family-run for-generation farms, collapsing them. Because part of this agenda is people in the small and independent businesses don't go along with this woke, great reset, corporatist agenda. They know that. The more you can crush them, and then what happens? They go bankrupt. Bill Gates in America buys American farmland. He's now the single largest farmland owner. But don't worry, we have competition. China, there's worries about a Chinese farmland monopoly also in the United States. They're buying up land. So we have, it's actual competition. Bill Gates on one hand and China on the other competing on who's going to be the biggest American farmland owner. And I don't know who you want to win that battle. I haven't decided. I might be leaning toward China. I'm not sure. Because Bill Gates has a whole agenda of pushing the fake lab-grown meat insects. He's got a business interest in this fake meat business. So being America's largest farmland owner, he'll have all sorts of leverage in order to fight that. But anyway, so they're going to control our energy, and that's the whole idea of the Green New Deal, is make energy scarce, make it just like meat, rare and expensive. So all these solar and wind mandates, if solar and wind truly were able to replace fossil fuels, if it was truly cheaper, you wouldn't need to mandate them and ban the other forms of energy. The same thing with the internal combustion engine. The internal combustion engine, if electric cars are so great, why do you have to ban their competition? You can even tie it to presidential politics. If they're so confident that Joe Biden can beat Donald Trump, why do you have an FBI raid, and why is their stated goal to disqualify him from running for office? You know something's up in this whole agenda when their stated goal is taking away, stripping away your rights and your privileges, your way of life. The same time they're stripping away your freedoms, they're literally not giving any choices, and they're steering you to the only direction that they want, which is a global agenda. As part of this, we'll say net zero, which I mean by that, everything from UN Sustainable Agenda, Green New Deal, UN Paris Agreement. The whole net zero agenda seeks a controlled demolition of the current world. That's what the Great Reset is. Collapse everything currently, and then we'll rebuild. And rebuilding means equity asset firms, billionaires, corporations, national chains, things like big tech, are all going to be the big players in charge, whether it's, and it's all through monopolies. And that's why big tech is a monopoly. That's why they don't want to give it up. That's why Bill Gates, people say, well, he's an American capitalist. Now, Bill Gates got rich because he had a would-be monopolist on his Microsoft. And so what's he trying to do now? He's trying to monopolize American farmland. This is what the World Economic Forum is. They want a monopoly on power, monopoly on information. And the people below them, us, the unwashed masses, they actually believe if we're allowed to live our lives unrestrained, if we're allowed to do what we were, what have been doing in America with freedom and freedom of movement and prosperity and middle-class values, that we will destroy the earth, will create a climate crisis, environmental degradation, white supremacy, essentially cause a huge race war, everything. They think we will literally are unable to take care of ourselves. So therefore, they have to come in, manage, plan, and manage every aspect of our lives, masterminding from above like we're puppets. And that's what they're doing. And it's not like, oh, that's going to happen. That's been happening at an accelerated pace since March of 2020, when we acquiesced in a Republican president. I still maintain that had Hillary Clinton been president, that there would have been healthy and vigorous pushback on a COVID health declaration, any talk of lockdowns. But because it was done by a conservative Republican president, it was the perfect, you know, example of people accepting it. Kind of like only Nixon could have normalized relations with China in the 1970s. A Democrat couldn't have done it. You needed a strong anti-communist. Well, you needed a strong free market capitalist like Donald Trump in order to sell this to people. And it was a shame because that literally ushered in this whole era. And it's not something you can just snap and get out of because they know they got us. As Jane Fonda's own words were, this is God's gift to the left, COVID. And what they mean by that, it's a way that they can literally achieve the same agenda. If you go back to the 1960s, every aspect of the overpopulation debate leading into the 70s with the man-made global cooling debate, leading into the 80s with the Amazon rainforest, deforestation, and the rainforest disappearing, no matter what environmental scare, it was always the same solution. Less national sovereignty, wealth redistribution, you'll have less freedom, you'll have restrictions and austerity. It's about them coming in and taking charge because of a real or perceived emergency. And that's where we are right now. We can no longer have our way of life, our freedoms, because the earth can't handle it. Economic systems, it's inequity, it's racist, it's, you know, we're promoting white supremacy, hatred of trans ideology. They got us, and we're reeling, and they control all the major organs of power. What we control are the masses. We are the people. We have the real power, but we have to organize and use it. Hmm.
So what would you tell someone who's, let's say, watching your interview, and they're very sympathetic to the globalist cause, because they're assuming that the people at the UN, at the WEF, they're these titans, they have access to the most amount of information, they're able to see this climate crisis happening, and they're really worried about it, and so they're implementing a shift in society to avert an actual catastrophe so that our future generations can have an earth, even though, let's say, that earth is now controlled by a more centralized form of government. What would you tell them?
Well, that's the whole folly. It goes back to Woodrow Wilson, the idea that these are experts who've studied it, who know more than the average person, and that we should respect expert judgment. And this is the consensus of these experts. What I would tell that person is look through history. This is not actually anything as you've described. These are people who have a vision of a world, and it's a utopian vision of this world where everything's going to be ordered, everyone gets their fair share, to each according to his own, to use a phrase. And the idea is anything short of that has to be micromanaged and corrected. So in order to achieve that goal, they've come up with crisis after crisis after crisis. I just mentioned a few when we went through the environmental, whether it's overpopulation, the man-made global cooling scale, deforestation, and particularly overpopulation paralleled it exactly the later climate scares and the environmental degradation scares. But essentially, these experts are running a campaign cause when it comes to selling these fares. The actual climate crisis does not exist. And if you actually look at what they produce in the United Nations reports, the reports actually show you that extreme weather is not increasing. It's actually in the data points. But the summary for policymakers, which is what they promote and which is what the media promote, has to be agreed to line by line from the scientists and the UN bureaucrats. And this is literally not a scientific process. But this is done because it's a campaign cause. And the United Nations will actually say when they release these scientific reports that this report proves we need a wholesale restructuring of society, that we need a radical top-down redesign, and that we have to do this. And the activists will say, someone like a friend of Al Gore, his name's failing me at the moment, but he actually came out and said the United Nations just said that we need to go a Marxist revolution in order to fight global warming. It's finally time they said it, because they use the same exact language. And so they're using a science scare to achieve this. And the idea that these are experts, and this was done very effectively, the idea of the expert's credential. Like, if your kid is being masked 8 hours a day in kindergarten, you're a parent, say you didn't even finish college, who are you to go up against Anthony Fauci and the World Health? These are credentialed experts with degrees coming out their ears and decades of experience. You're an unscientific rube hick from the country. How dare you tell them what society should do, even though it's your kid? This is that whole mentality. And this is essentially what America rejected. We rejected as our founding that idea of the nobility and the ruling class and the elite and that whole caste system. We became a country. So it's particularly unbelievable to me that America didn't push back enough against either the climate scare or during the COVID lockdowns. But essentially, we need to fight back on this because experts know no better than us. It was famously William F. Buckley, when he ran for mayor of New York City, I think it was 1966, he said he'd rather be ruled by any random names in the New York City telephone book picked out at random than by the entire governing board at Harvard University, because expert rules. The problem is experts actually, it becomes an arrogance. And I think it was Friedrich Hayek, the conceit of arrogance, the idea that you start believing that you're so smart and that your colleagues are so smart that you can mastermind, plan a whole society, and think of every aspect and every action and reaction. And this is where you come into the planned economies that the 20th century had the horrors of in terms of human rights atrocities and collapsing systems, whether you're talking Mao and Stalin and Hitler. It's all based on that idea of expert rule, ultimately, that we know better, you guys are the masses, and it's based on a caste system, the whole idea of a Politburo. You have the ruling elite at top who gets all the benefits. Everyone else is crushed. That's what the World Economic Forum is creating, the Great Reset. You can see it with Bill Gates. You can see it with John Kerry, with the Hollywood activists, with the UN activists. They all live a lifestyle completely contrary to that which they are ready to impose upon us.
So, what you mentioned might actually shock a lot of people who have never heard of that, the idea that global warming and, let's say, the nitrogen issue, there's not as strong of a consensus as it's made out to be. Can you sort of explicate on that a little bit more?
Sure. The whole idea of man-made global warming starts with the greenhouse gas theory, 1890s, a Swedish physicist. And all he really said was, that this could cause a warming. And there's actually contradictory reports. At one point, he was worried about, a massive overheating. But at other times, he just praised this warming effect and the CO2 fertilization effect as having a great effect on crops and growing yields and plant and animal life. And his name was Arrhenius, the Swedish physicist. Well, anyway, you go from there. And then you can document this back. There was alternate swings of people worried about global cooling, global warming, all the way through. And then what happened was, in the late 60s, early 70s, man-made global cooling in terms of climate really caught on. Before fossil fuels caused global warming, fossil fuels caused global cooling. They believed in the 1970s that our aerosols from fossil fuel use was going up and blocking the sun and essentially creating global dimming, going to create a catastrophe on the planet. So they had solutions of geoengineering, of pouring black soot on the Arctic ice. They blamed individual floods and storms, weather events on man-made global cooling. CIA said man-made global cooling was a national security threat. They were worried about crop failure, all sorts of things. So that was the big issue in the 1970s. Well, by the end of the 70s, the cooling period had ended and we started warming up again. And also something else very important happened. Prior to the 1970s, science itself was more decentralized. They didn't have these big giant conferences. You didn't have annual UN meetings. That started ramping up in the 1970s. And you also had Eisenhower's 1961 inaugural warning, where he warned about government funding of scientists, how he said, you no longer have the scientists tinkering in his garage. You're going to have essentially create a fascist state where the government's going to fund only the science that supports its policies, which is exactly what happened. So by the 1980s, we start warming again, coming out of that cooling period from, like, say, the maybe late 40s through the late 70s, we cooled. And then Al Gore elected, he starts having hearings in Congress, and a NASA scientist starts making all this noise. So it wasn't, really wasn't catching on, though, until the red letter year for climate change was 1988. James Hansen does his congressional testimony where he says that the Earth is basically on fire and this is the hottest it's ever been. At the same time, the United Nations forms their climate panel. Well, once the UN formed their climate panel in 1988, their goal was to look at whether carbon dioxide caused dangerous warming. And here's as a bonus, if it found that it did cause dangerous warming, they got to appoint themselves in charge of the solution to this problem. So the United Nations had no incentive whatsoever to ever find CO2 was not causing a dangerous climate crisis, because it would have been completely contrary to their entire organization and their entire interests. So they're actually a self-interested lobbying organization, this UN climate panel. This was started. The first United Nations report showed the medieval warm period much warmer up here than it drops down to current temperatures. This actually included a lot of skeptical scientists at the time. This was the best and brightest. But then they realized the politics of this. And after the Kyoto Protocol stalled, they started talking. We actually had a scientist testify in the U.S. Senate when I worked there as a staffer, that United Nations scientists, activists started a campaign, we have to get rid of the medieval warm period, because they had to show current temperatures unprecedented. They ended up coming up with this thing called the hockey stick chart, which was then featured in the next United Nations report, which showed flat temperatures until the 20th century. This scared people, and this was the smoking gun proof which they needed. Well, then people started looking into this chart done by Michael Mann. It turned out it was statistical rubbish, that he couldn't back up any of the figures. He refused to release the data, and this has been a huge point of contention. But the damage was already done, because they were able to promote this and then claim that, you know, the unprecedented temperatures. So anyway, this forced out, that and Al Gore's movie flushed out all of these scientists, and you can talk to Nobel, in fact, my book interviewed Nobel Prize winning physicist Dr. Ivar Giever. I interviewed University of Pennsylvania's Dr. Robert Gegengack. These are scientists with hundreds of peer-reviewed studies. Will Happer has testified in to the United States Senate, a Princeton physicist considered the foremost expert on greenhouse gas. They will tell you that currently the Earth is in a CO2 famine. They will tell you that 90% of Earth's geologic history has been warmer than today. We're in the 10% coldest period in Earth's history. In other words, 90% of Earth's history was too warm to have ice at either pole. So we're in that. We're also in the 10% lowest period, geologically speaking, for carbon dioxide. We've had ice ages with many times higher CO2. Will Happer testified to the United States Senate that we're in a CO2 famine. So when you look at the actual geologic record, and even this is on a NOAA chart by the U.S. government. You can look at the temperatures going back millions of years, and the temperatures were much higher years ago, millions of years ago, and tens of thousands of years ago. These are on government charts. More recently, Biden's own EPA shows the 1930s heat waves as being about 10 times higher than anything we're contemplating today. So how do they spin that? What's happening? How can they hide the fact that we've cooled or that heat waves are much worse? The EPA does a study earlier this year which says heat waves since 1960 have skyrocketed. If this continues, blah, blah, blah. And you can look at the chart. It's from that. You can see the 1930s here and 1960 here, and then the heat waves go about here today. They cherry-picked the coldest period in the 100-year record and started it and said, this is how much heat waves have increased, completely ignoring their data from the 1930s, which shows, I think, 75% of all heat records are still broken before 1950. So this is how you manipulate people to believe in a climate crisis, a climate emergency. It's cherry-picking. It's those kind of stats. And as I mentioned, hurricanes, floods, tornadoes, droughts, wildfires, no trend on climate timescales or declining trend. And that is absolutely acknowledged by our national climate assessments. It's in the United Nations reports. It's actually mentioned in other government agencies when they say there's no signal of man-made. But it's all based on future at this point, the future scare. But instead of on these climate models, but aside from that, what they do with climate is they turn every event, what we call climate ambulance chasing, They weaponize the weather. So if there's a flood in Hong Kong or a heat wave in Paris, that's evidence of global warming. If you want to see how global warming is doing, look out your window. Did it rain today? There's a flood here. And the bottom line is there's always going to be a record broken somewhere on Earth. That's not climate, though. And they'll tell you that. You used to tell you that on a cold, snowy day. Well, that's weather. That's not climate. But what's happened here is they've weaponized the weather, making you forget that climate is long-term trends. And if you're looking at a hurricane that comes in or a flood somewhere, there's always going to be a record somewhere. And these 1-in-500-year floods, they're supposed to happen all the time everywhere around the earth because it's an individual location. What you want to look at is the trends. And it's very akin to what people do with like a lottery or a casino would do with slot winners. If you highlight every day, say you own, say, 50 casinos, like you're Steve Wynn or Donald Trump, and you highlight, look, this person, three people won the slot machine today, and you start putting their pictures up and you do daily reports, the public would get the impression that everyone's winning at slots, that slots are paying out constantly. The look at that, there, I have the names, the faces, I have the amounts. Look at this, I have the data. These people are winning at slots every single day. You would conclude that slots are paying out and it's a great way to make money and that this is something you should do. When in reality, 99% of the people are losing and they're cherry picking. That's what they've done with weaponizing the weather. They pull out some historic a weather event somewhere that's not unique or might be unique to that one regional area. And they do the same thing on, with, they'll say, they'll get a region, they'll say, well, in this Northern California, droughts have increased, you know, blank since 1990, which probably true. But if you look at the state of California as a whole or the globe, you'll find that droughts have declined. You'll find that California as a whole had much, in the whole West, had mega droughts centuries ago, long before mankind influence. So it's a campaign cause. They don't care about the actual science. ClimateGate emails revealed to us that this was a manufactured campaign of these United Nations scientists colluding together to create essentially a narrative that no one could dissent from, and they threatened scientific publications for pulling, for publishing anyone who dissented from it.
So I wanted to kind of shift back to the discussion of U.S. policy and specifically in the Green New Deal. So can you give sort of origins of the Green New Deal? Because it was made very public, I believe, in 2019 around there when AOC and Senator Markey started publishing it. But, you know, it has a history going back to 2010 and probably before that. Can you?
The Green New Deal, by name, has a specifically goes back to about 2007, 2008. I believe it was a New York Times columnist who may have used the phrase. Michael Schellenberger also was essentially a Marxist progressive activist pushing for the original Green New Deal. He was considered Times Hero of the Environment, Time Magazine. He's now apologized for his role, but he played an instrumental part in assembling and pushing for the first Green New Deal. And that led to Obama's big energy stimulus bill from his first term. But essentially, it's been bandied about for the last decade, and it all came into fruition when Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was running for Congress in 2019, and she had the upset 2018 had the upset victory, and she literally became the face of the Green New Deal. But the key to remember here is the origin of the Green New Deal goes back probably centuries to the philosopher Malthus, who believed in this sort of resource scarcity and that humans were going to run out of everything and overpopulation and that we had to manage everything as a society or we were going to have mass death and starvation. So is that philosophical impetus, but more specifically, in the 1960s with the overpopulation campaign and with the man-made global cooling scare, all of the solutions back then read like a primitive version of the Green New Deal. It was all about resource scarcity, limiting free market capitalism, limiting human freedom, wealth redistribution, and sovereignty limiting treaties and the idea of global solutions and getting other countries. So, I actually in my book compare the 1970s solutions to man-made global cooling with the current Green New Deal, and they're very close parallels. But fast-forwarding to that, you get to the 1992 Rio Earth Summit, which was attended by George H.W. Bush. He went down there and signed that treaty. That brought Agenda 21 to the United States. It was actually introduced on the House floor by none other than Nancy Pelosi, who read pieces of the original Agenda 21. And in my book, I show that. The idea of the resource scarcity and the managed economy in order to fight it, and all, and people giving up freedom and all, and essentially the collapse of the current order in order for the good of the planet. In other words, we're all facing this crisis. We all have to come together. This is about community and a shared values fighting this crisis. So the original Agenda 21 literally mirrored it, and that's really the roots, if you will, of the Green New Deal. Also, the Club of Rome in the 1970s was another organization that came out with a very primitive version of that, and it's the same sort of Malthus, the idea of resource scarcity, and people can't be allowed freedom because freedom and left to your own devices and capitalism destroy the earth, and therefore we have to crush that and manage and control people because people left to their own devices are evil to the planet. So Agenda 21 comes in the 90s, and then that, of course, morphs to Agenda 2030 now. And then you have that. The whole Rio Earth Summit started that whole UN Climate Summit series. So we have a Republican president to thank for that, George H.W. Bush. And that whole process, of course, goes perfectly in hand with what the Green New Deal is. So the Green New Deal really is just the latest incarnation of that impulse that, you know, humans can't be free because we will destroy everything. And it's, we need expert management of them. So, and where we stand currently, the Green New Deal was pushed, actually implemented in Europe. They're many years ahead of us. And we can see how where the United States is heading by looking at Europe. We can see where Boris Johnson's administration bragged about pouring cement into the fracking wells as a net zero in 2019, I believe, as a net zero virtue signal. We can see Germany and France and the Nordic, all giving up their domestic energy to rely more and more energy from Russia. And that's, you can see where it's caused a national security thing. But that was all because of their adherence to the Green New Deal, much stricter than the U.S. So now the United States, of course, is following that path. And so the Green New Deal is net zero. The Green New Deal is all part of the UN Agenda 21, Agenda 2030, and it's all part of this UN climate treaty process as well.
Well, so in terms of some of the maybe specifics, details of the deal, I know it addresses things like guaranteed jobs, inequity, so the carbon tax, guaranteed health care even, so it goes far beyond just the green. Can you sort of lay it out? If it was implemented as written, what are some of the changes that would have to be made in this country?
Well, you know, Ocasio Cortez actually did like a utopian Great Reset video once of how the world would be under it. But essentially, it's calling for a world without carbon-based energy. It's a utopian vision of everyone living in sort of a little agrarian land, an urban land section with their own like local organic food. They don't like mass production of food. They don't like high yield agriculture. They want everyone eating off a low organic sort of local farming, which is what we saw them try to do in Sri Lanka, which is why they're shutting down all the modern farming. They don't like vehicles. They're pushing, again, heavily for an electric vehicle mandate. But what's weird about that is the Green New Deal ignores that electric vehicles dig the earth, not in a 1970s groovy Brady Bunch way, but in a excavating the earth for mining, for cobalt, lithium, rare earth mining, and a huge dependence on China. And they also, the Green New Deal goes through every aspect of transportation, flying, going after emissions, goes after our diet, goes after meat eating, goes after cattle. Actually, and they openly, it was bizarre, and then they had later pulled it, but talking about cow farting. The Green New Deal, and as you mentioned, goes in way beyond all of the environmental issues as well, and gets into race, environmental justice. It gets into women's rights, minorities. It gets into just huge, big economic restructuring of every aspect of the economy. It's a radical, essentially, a plan that was pushed as a utopian vision. Because even at the time, if you asked AOC what the likelihood, she said, well, they're aspirational goals. And so they're just trying to reset society. And that's why when COVID lockdowns hit and you had stay-at-home orders and all flights stopped and cars stopped and the greenhouse gases literally shut off completely, it was like the Green New Deal was imposed upon the world overnight. So if you want to know what the Green New Deal looks like, go back to April of 2020 and look at any average country, and then you would see what the vision was, because it was a complete denial of modern society and the way we live.
The way you described it is actually quite interesting, how Well, AOC described it as being sort of a vision to work towards, which is fine when you're going around the country and trying to convince people themselves, hey, you guys should stop eating meat, you guys should set up agrarian communes, you know, perhaps you should, you know, pool together and have some free health care by, you know, pooling your resources together, et cetera. That's okay as a vision, but when she's proposing it as a government policy, what would it mean to the freedoms of the people in this country if it were to go into effect?
Well, first of all, it is going to affect. This is important to mention, and we're seeing what it means. First of all, President Obama realized when he failed to get his climate bill, cap and trade, in 2010. After two votes, they rammed it through Congress, and it never even came up for a vote in a Democrat Senate with supermajority. Why? Because Democrats wouldn't support it. Al Franken wrote a letter along with like eight other Democrats. Al Franken, a Minnesota liberal Democrat senator, saying he could not support the bill because it would devastate their industries back home. So they realized, President Obama, that this wasn't going to happen through the Democratic legislative body. So Obama went full what I call Chinification of America. All executive orders, EPA executive orders, and he went after the American Clean Power Act. He implemented that. They declared carbon dioxide a pollutant. Humans inhale oxygen, we exhale carbon dioxide. It's a long way of saying AOC and Massachusetts Senator Markey introduced the Green New Deal in Congress. Wow, they're being business. It's actually going to be voted on. It never came up for a vote. They never had committee hearings on it. They never had constituent town hall. Why is that? Don't they want it vote? Don't they want the Green New Deal? They don't need no stinking democracy. Because what Biden did when he came in was he announced that every agency, every cabinet agency of the United States government is going to be a climate agency. So the Green New Deal is being implemented through the Treasury Department, through Janet Yellen, through Environment Social Governance, through the Securities and Exchange Commission, through climate disclosure laws, which are now demonizing companies that have high emissions, and you're going to have to start doing something about that because right now it's just a disclosure, and pretty soon it won't be. It's done through our the Bureau of Land Management, through the Department of Agriculture. Everything is climate focused. Department of Agriculture, of course, affecting modern fertilizer because of nitrogen. It's affecting our transportation department. We're seeing what the Green New Deal looks like with higher and higher fuel economy standards for vehicles, with supply shortages, with electric vehicle mandates. We're seeing it through the State Department with the push for all the, you know, United Nations climate treaties and giving up our national sovereignty. So every agency has been turned into a climate agency. And we're seeing the effects of the Green New Deal is being implemented in front of our eyes. The Inflation Reduction Act, or I call it the Biden Mansion Climate Bill, is furthering that through all the funding mechanisms. And there's even language in it. And Bloomberg News is reporting this. There's language in the Inflation Reduction Act that's trying to overturn the Supreme Court ruling saying that you can't regulate carbon dioxide as a pollutant, which was a huge case in 2022. The language in this makes it sound as though they're trying to expand the Clean Air Act to include carbon dioxide. Who knows? A future judge, future Supreme Court may say, well, they did legislate it, so now you can regulate carbon dioxide as a pollutant. In other words, human breath goes back to being a pollutant. So we're seeing the effects of the Green New Deal in our supply shortages, in our energy costs, in our vehicle prices, in the price of gas. We're seeing it in land use policies. We're seeing it in trying to get loans. We have banks now in Australia, and this is coming to the U.S., who won't even give out loans now, announcing they won't give out loans for anyone financing a gas-powered car because they're bad for the environment. It's become the Green New Deal doesn't need Congress, doesn't need to be legislation. It's being implemented, and we're living through it. Whenever you see austerity, human suffering, economic collapse, food shortages, energy shortages, car shortages, which is coming, that's the Green New Deal, and you're seeing the effect of it. It's all about austerity, suffering, sacrificing for the planet. We all have to come together. This is our World War II. Think about that. Wartime rationing. Talk to parents, grandparents who lived through World War II. Yeah, you're fighting Hitler, but it's a miserable time. It's a miserable time in terms of economic activity. You are suffering. You're giving up stuff. This is what they want us to be on a permanent basis because we're going to be in a permanent climate crisis. And that's the next thing. As bad as everything I just described is, it's nothing to what's coming. potentially, the Associated Press has reported in 2022 that Biden is set to declare a national climate emergency. This thought it was going to happen in July. It didn't. I think they wisely decided to wait until after the midterm election. But once he declares a national climate emergency, which he's been urged to by Senator Elizabeth Warren, by Senator Chuck Schumer, by House Democrats, he will be immediately granted 130 new executive powers, wartime powers, to the President of the United States. These powers will extend to mayors, governors. They'll be able to, and they've already been laid out what they could do. International Energy Agency, what I call an energy lockdown report in 2022, listed. You could start doing odd, even days for vehicles. You could do car-free cities. The idea is the climate emergency is so bad, you could shut down gas stations. And part of this is, think about the lockdowns. Think about how they wanted to go after compliance. And if you reported your neighbor for having an unauthorized barbecue in L.A., you could tell the authorities, and they would shut off their public utilities, their water or their electricity, for violating the COVID orders. Well, one of the things, and Joe Manchin pointed this out with the EV mandates, is Biden wants to build a national federal charging database for electric cars. Why does he want to do it? Well, you know, and Joe Manchin pointed out that when Model Ts became mass-produced by Henry Ford, we had mom-and-pop gas stations pop up, convenience stores, general stores all over the country. And it was, it may have been fun, big oil giving it, but they were run all over the country independent. Biden now wants a federalized charging station infrastructure put in. Think of that, the next viral emergency, climate emergency. The federal government can shut down immediate all transportation with a flip of a switch in all the charging stations across the country. It's a form of, it's risking even greater control for central power and for compliance on future endeavors, whatever the state deems necessary. So anyway, long way of saying that the Green New Deal is being implemented without a vote. It doesn't need legislation. You don't need democracy. The Biden administration is doing it through the executive branch without a vote.
Wow. So essentially, if I understand you correctly, you're saying that the Green New Deal, as, let's say, a standalone bill, it doesn't even matter.
It's regardless. They're never going to vote on it. I mean, I guess if they got super majorities again, they might bring it up, but that's not likely any time in the next few years.
But it was through, let's say, a process of osmosis taken up by all these different agencies.
Yes, it was a collection of stuff over decades, taking elements of all aspects of UN Agenda 21, the Club of Rome, the solutions to global cooling, the United Nations, climate process. And it was just sort of a mishmash of all of that put together, Obama's first stimulus bill, and it was labeled the Green New Deal. And I want to say it was Tom Friedman. I think he was the one who tries to take credit. He was the New York Times columnist who I think used the phrase first. It was either him or Paul Krugman, one of those two. Again, that was more of a marketing thing. And, of course, they had a freshman congressman as the face of the Green New Deal. And that was important at the time, especially because the movement had moved beyond, the climate movement had moved beyond Al Gore and beyond Leonardo DiCaprio and instead became the youth movement. And essentially what I say is, if you look at Gallup polling, they failed to move adults. Voters from 1989 to current, there was really no change in concern for global warming. Not, do you believe is the planet warming or is global warming real? But in concern. So what they realized is you can't convince the adults. Generally, they failed, and they failed legislatively for decades. They failed in 2003, 2005, 2009, 2010. They just kept failing in terms of getting anything passed in Congress. This was the key why AOC, a freshman congressman, was the face of the climate movement. They realized that kids were more gullible than adults. And so they went from kindergarten through college, Common Core curriculum, I've actually testified, making to all states. And the Common Core curriculum on climate teaches there's no dissent. This is all facts. This is as solid as gravity, as a theory, essentially. And so what happened was AOC was needed because that was the rise of Greta Thunberg, the rise of the Sunshine Movement, the rise of the child activists. And that's why they gave it to this sort of freshman congresswoman who just spewed a lot of platitudes about it because it was a popular movement and they were going after the youth activism.
Let me ask you, in the Inflation Reduction Act, which was passed just recently, very recently, how much of the Green New Deal elements are in that particular bill?
Well, I mean, there's probably elements of every aspect of the Green New Deal when you look at it. I mean, it goes It goes into even the environmental justice aspects. It goes into the energy aspects, the electric vehicle aspects. I think it even funds the climate core, like they're modeling it after Franklin Delano Roosevelt's, you know, work, New Deal programs. So I think there's a lot of it in there. It's basically a spending version of the Green New Deal. And the fact that it includes language to sort of get ready for a court challenge in the future where we can regulate carbon dioxide as a pollutant is just a bigger bonus for the Green New Deal. But it's essentially a budget bill for the Green New Deal.
Wow. So let me ask you this. So these policies that you're describing being implemented in these various ways, the various channels, through essential executive fiat, some of them are kind of society-wide, like there might just be less meat available overall, and so you won't be able to buy anymore, right? So that's one thing. But then some of them are like they're putting trackers in vehicles now to actually track how far you're going, where you're going, et cetera, so things like that. And at the WEF, at the World Economic Forum, there was even one very kind of viral speech talking about how companies are now developing carbon footprint monitors for individuals.
Yes.
So if, let's say, these policies really all go into effect and this movement continues, is it possible that we could live in a society that even the Soviet Union couldn't have dreamed of in terms of control?
Yes, that's the whole point of my book. This is not just a brave new world, but it's a brave new world on digital steroids. I mean, you don't need the infrastructure of terror and militarization that you had in Nazis and Soviet Union. You have a way of controlling people. And I think it was Aldous Huxley who said the ultimate way is to control people where they're not even aware that they're in a prison. Because And one of the World Economic Forum advisors actually said there's going to be a lot of what he called like useless people, and essentially that we need to occupy their time with screen time and video games, and this is the way they're going to sort of give the public, just divert them from really what's going on, and to say you have a lull public. And I also believe it's partially one of the reasons they push the legalized marijuana, because a sort of laid-back populace that's stoned, high, addicted to video games, and not really engaged in politics is exactly what they want. They want uneducated, easy-to-command populace. That's how they, in order to achieve this.
Well, if it were to go into effect, what, like realistically, are we going to be living in a prison state?
You have already. The United Nations has joined up with MasterCard to do a credit card monitoring of your carbon footprint. The World Economic Forum has praised this. In one particular aspect, the card cuts off your ability to spend money when you reach your carbon max. So they're going to be monitoring all your purchases at grocery stores, for flights, for gas, for your electric bill. And if you exceed your carbon footprint, they shut you down. And we're finding this is happening, whether we're talking about the Freedom Convoy in Canada, whether you're talking about vax mandates. There's countries now that have shut off people's ability for banking if you don't go along and get a vaccine. They're talking about shutting off your social media. We've already seen that. Whether you use Gmail or Facebook or Twitter, you can just become an unpersoned overnight. And then at the point, even your texts could be affected. So they have a way of just making you voiceless, a voiceless submissive to this system. And we're seeing this in China. This is the social credit system. China monitors all their citizens. They even have alerts to let you know if you're near someone who has a bad credit rating or someone who's been a criminal and your phone can go off. It's an idea, a level of surveillance and control that we've never gotten used to. We had the head of Pfizer went to a World Economic Forum, was bragging about these new pills that are coming up. This is on video. Again, we're not conspiracy theorists. We're conspiracy observers. 2020 was the year conspiracy realities outnumbered conspiracy theories. But the head of Big Pharma is there talking about people being able to take a pill with a tracking device, and this would help with compliance because your doctor would know whether you took the pill and whether it was in your system. This is the kind of stuff that we're facing. It's a brave new world. And, of course, there's the whole aspect of the Great Reset, which is transhumanism, the fourth industrial revolution where humans become part of machines. And we had the spectacle of Klaus Schwab, chairman of the World Economic Forum, asking Sergio Brin, the co-founder, head of Google, at an event publicly aired about In a few years from now, when this audience has little brain chimp implants, and we'll be able to tell all of their emotions and what we say, whether they like it or not, you know, how plausible do you think that's going to be? And the head of Google's like, oh, I think that's very plausible. That's probably coming. I mean, this is their vision for us, where they're going to monitor, control. And if you want to look at where we're headed, just look at China. And then just look at who our leaders are. Our leaders have praised China's one-party rule and social credit system. Justin Trudeau has said he has great admiration for China's dictatorship. Tom Friedman, New York Times, has said you can get things done in a democracy, and he's very impressed with it. Cristina Figueres, former UN climate chief, has praised China and talked about how detrimental democracy was to fighting climate change. We have cabinet secretaries in the U.S. So what happened was, when COVID came, the once free West copied China. We became a one-party state because suddenly the bureaucracy, the unelected bureaucrats under emergency decree, were able to make all these decisions. All the stay-at-home orders, all the vax mandate, all the masks, these weren't voted on by Congress or House of Representatives or boards of supervisors. They were done by unelected bureaucrats through emergency decree. That's our future. We became like China. And that's why Jane Fonda said COVID was the greatest gift to the left. It gave them finally one-party authoritarian Chinese-style control, and they don't want to give it up. Emergency orders are going to keep going and going. It's simply, obviously, as future goes on, as time goes on, the ability with technology to control people increases. And the thing you have to give the World Economic Forum credit for is they're open, they're public, they've stated everything that they want to do. It's all on record. And that's the beauty of this is, you know, I have 90 pages of footnotes. I go to mainstream sources. I'll cite, you know, NBC News, I'll cite USA Today, I cite New York Times, because it's all there. This isn't like, an Alex Jones blog piece asserted this. No, this is their own quotes. I have the videos. You can watch them say this. And with a recent quote of Klaus Schwab saying, us here in this room at a World Economic Forum, we get to decide the future. It's up to us in this room. This is like Mad Men talk, like Bond villain talk. But it's real. It's happening. We're seeing it in real life. The whole idea of supply chain, of debt, of inflation, of energy shortages, of coming food shortages. And the thing about food shortages, which is amazing, is they predicted it for years that we were going to have food shortages due to climate change. Their policies are specifically stated in addressing to create food shortages by shutting down high-yield agriculture. And their solution is fake lab-grown meat and insect eating. And you have the spectacle of Robert Downey Jr. going on Stephen Colbert's show promoting insect protein paste that people can start drinking and eating. World Economic Forum's huge on this. United Nations huge on this. They're going to create a food shortage, and then they're going to say, we told you, we predicted it. I told you climate, they're going to blame our food shortage on climate change, not their policies shutting down modern farming techniques. And that's the thing. So in order to solve it, they're going to come up with more of these kind of solutions that'll crush it even more. And they'll blame that on climate change. And they'll get away with it. This will be a feature in Time magazine. Climate scientists predicted for decades that climate would cause food shortages. The food shortages have arrived. And they'll have a whole article. This is how it works. It's a complete bizarro world.
Well, Mark, thank you so much.